This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just say it.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I don't know. I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
Well, every Thursday we have Roundtable, and it's usually hosted by Kelly McDonald, except when it's not. And today it's hosted by me, Danielle McLaughlin, and I have as guests Margaret Weldon and AMI video editor Mark Phoenix. Hello, Margaret, and hello, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. Good. There. The terrible opinions machine is here.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Because, you know, I get accused by my family of having a whole lot of weird opinions, so I always like meeting other people who have many opinions. We've got a whole bunch of interesting things to talk about on the roundtable today. Our first item, and get ready for this, U.S. President Joe Biden signed an executive order earlier this week to make it a little easier for women who have to travel from state to state to get an abortion. Of course, this is following the striking down of the Roe v. Wade decision after so many years. Let's hear what they have to say.
President Biden today signs an executive order to pave the way for Medicaid to pay for abortion services for people traveling from a state where abortion is illegal to a state where abortion is legal. The president will sign the order during the first meeting of a federal interagency task force on reproductive health care access he created last month. He'll attend the event virtually since he's still isolating with a rebound case of COVID. The move by the president comes as voters in Kansas Tuesday overwhelmingly blocked an amendment that would have eliminated the constitutional right to an abortion from that state's constitution. Karen Travers, ABC News, Washington.
So, Margaret, what do you think about this particular development now in the U.S.? How is it striking you that the president's trying to protect people's rights when he can't really seem to do it federally? How does that look to you?
I guess my first thing is I don't really understand the whole American government structure to begin with. Like, it just to me sounds very complicated. But I guess the thing is, if this is going to help women who need it, then I'm all for it. I can't even believe the verdict was overturned anyways. That was sort of blows my mind. Just because I know I read up on the history of it when it was first brought into play. And, you know, we always talk about freedom of choice and all kinds of things. And I guess, you know, what makes me wonder is what's going to happen next. But yeah, if this is the way they have to do it, and if it means that women are going to be able to get what they need safely, then sure, I'm all for it.
Yeah, comparing it, the U.S. and Canadian systems is a bit of a dog's breakfast. But suffice it to say that in Canada, our criminal laws are federal, and in the United States, they go state by state. So that's why you get the situation where abortion may be illegal in one state and legal in the next state, and people will have to travel in order to have the procedure. Mark, what's your view on this?
It's pretty desperate when the president has to reach for the executive orders to try to forestall what a whole bunch of states are trying to do, which is actually prevent people from going to other states to, seek reproductive care. I think Idaho was one state that's trying to put something in law, which would actually make it illegal to abet someone crossing state lines. Like, they're trying to trap people and trying to, remove people's bodily autonomy. And there's a whole assault on bodily autonomy happening right now, which, any disabled person, myself, yourselves, a lot of people listening to this, it's a critical, characteristic in our lives, having basic control over what we do and what we need. And they're going after people who need, gender affirming care. They're going after people who need reproductive care, trying to, ram everyone into a couple of statistical boxes and saying, this is how you will live, and we will tell you what you will do with your own body. The joke I've seen going around is, government's small enough to fit in your uterus.
Oh, gosh, that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, I read a couple of stories about families where a mother and daughter were crossing state lines for they were on their way to some kind of an athletic competition. The daughter was going to compete, and they were stopped by the police, who asked the daughter if she was pregnant. They asked her all kinds of incredibly invasive questions, none of which by law she should answer. She doesn't need to. And yet you can imagine the chilling effect of crossing state lines if you think you're going to be interrogated about your bodily integrity, as you've said, Mark. This is quite a troubling thing.
But the thing is, you could say it by law, you shouldn't have to answer it. But then if you don't, what are the consequences?
Well, right? You wonder, don't you? Yeah.
Well, this was the kind of mess that popped up way back in the mid-1800s. Some people have made reference to the Fugitive Slave Act as the kind of thing that's kind of popping back up, where suddenly states that want to exert more control over people's bodies will rope in states that don't want to via federal force. Which mm-hmm. is kind of ironic when you consider a lot of the striking down of Roe v. Wade was about over the claim that this should be left to the states, except when people can go to another state, then apparently it's back to let's make this a federal matter again.
Yeah, it's quite terrifying actually if you think about it, and that you have the right to your bodily integrity depending upon what state you live in is really awful. I know that there are Canadian clinics that are setting themselves up to make themselves accessible to Americans crossing the border for reproductive care, including abortion. But as I mentioned on a Know Your Rights segment, the people who did this don't seem to understand how abortion has been defined. It includes such things as taking care of women who've miscarried, who need to have a dilatation and curettage, and they're having to go out of state. Their other choice may be to die from infection. So, it's really, really a
terrifying thing. You have to wonder if it's they don't understand or they don't care. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Because it's not them going through it. And
well, yeah. I love it when a whole bunch of old white guys, determine what happens to women, right? I mean,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They say, yes, he who hath not a uterus. Well, no. That's certainly a story that is going to keep us troubled for some time to come. This one's slightly later, not necessarily entirely, but Beyoncé is removing an offensive term for disabled people from a new song that she co-wrote with Canadian rapper Drake. The song Healed. Am I right? Heated. I'm sorry. Heated on her record Renaissance contains a word. The word is spaz, that it's considered a derogatory reference to the medical term for a form of cerebral palsy. Beyoncé's spokeswoman says the word was not used intentionally in a harmful way. We know that Lizzo removed the word from one of her songs in June after disability advocates complained. Here's a clip of Heated by Beyoncé. I guess they didn't play the part with the dreaded word, but what do you think? Should people be changing the words of their songs because somebody doesn't like the insulting reference? Mark, what do you think?
I think if someone has the capability to, absolutely, go back, make that edit, and make it clear. I may not have realized this was something I shouldn't say, but I've listened to people who've been telling me about this. I get it. It was wrong to do this. I'm going to go back and fix it. Lizzo kind of set the precedent by doing this already, and this is going to keep coming up more because there are a lot of words that get thrown around that people don't realize or just try to ignore that are slurs. There's one in particular for referring to Roma traveler people that
yes.
just keeps getting used. That it'll just drop and I'll go, I'll flinch.
And when it's used as a verb, it's even worse, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's terrible, absolutely terrible. So the fact that, you know, this is a major studio, major artist production, they have all the capability, all the processing, all the masters, everything in the world to do it, they can absolutely go back in and make that change so as not to push away a part of the listening audience.
What do you think, Margaret?
I quite agree with Mark. I don't know how I could add to it. You know, I think the other thing too, when people have to also realize that sometimes they do, even though they don't mean it, like words really can hurt, right? Yes. And not just in songs, but in comments too. I mean, I go back to this, this Will Smith, you know, this kind of reminds me of the Will Smith and the Chris Rock thing where, no, you know, Will Smith did not have the right to hit anybody. But I think what happened was he was hurt because of the words that Chris Rock used against his wife, right?
His wife.
And I think it's the same thing here, right?
What do you think about the freedom of expression argument, though? You know, people say, you know, artists, singers, songwriters or artists should have the right to use language any way they choose. And if you don't like the song, don't listen to it. What do you think of that argument?
Yeah, that's kind of another way of looking at it too, right? Like, where does it stop? Where does it end? I guess.
Well, I mean, well, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, this comes to a question of, you know, legal freedom of speech versus ethical freedom of speech. Legally, it's bounds on what the government can do. Ethically, if someone wants to sit there and say some hideously offensive word and argue, I have every right to say it, I think it's artistically important, I'm going to keep saying it. Okay. You can go on saying it, and I can go on saying that you're a jerk for saying it.
That's true.
Freedom of speech for me and for thee.
That's,
you want to play it that way?
That is the way that it works. I would also imagine that there's a financial issue here. You know, if people are deeply offended by a song, they aren't going to pay for it. So, you know, maybe that's another good reason to go back and change it, as you have suggested. Although we know that there are, you know, kinds of music, certainly rap music, that use the N-word a whole lot. And, you know, some people said, I don't want to hear that word at all. And yet it seems to keep recurring in certain kinds of music. So, you know, will people go back and change that? I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I guess, again, it gets back to this art, like, as you say, the freedom of expression kind of thing too, right?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big question. Well, we have one more clip here. The parent company of popular retailers TJ Maxx, Marshalls, and Home Goods in the U.S. is under fire after being ordered to pay millions in fines following claims that they knowingly sold recalled products that put small children at risk. ABC's Ariel Reshef explains.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission says TJX stores knowingly sold, offered for sale, and distributed approximately 1,200 recalled products. Now the company will pay a $13 million fine. The majority of those items sold risked infant suffocation and death. They include the Kids 2 rocking sleepers, Fisher-Price rock and play sleepers, and Fisher-Price incline sleeper accessory for ultralight day and night play yards.
Goodness. Well... Huh. She said 13 million, I think. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
Is that, in your view, a big enough settlement? Or, you know, I mean, when you're talking about something that could actually endanger the life of a child, I don't know. I mean, should they be ordered never again to sell a recalled product? What's your view, Mark? What do you think?
Well, I'm very curious what the exact circumstances are around this particular matter. I mean, it sounds like the kind of thing where a couple of individual stores might have continued selling without pulling them. It's whatever the circumstances are, things that endanger people's lives are things that have to be dealt with. And we, in particular, get really concerned about the lives of infants and children because they're so vulnerable. And to see someone, at least see a company held to account for it, in a manner that, you know, might actually put a little dent in their profit margin, it's an increasingly rare thing to see. And it seems to be a bit of low-hanging fruit that they're going after, that they went after, you know, TJ Maxx for selling these things than they shouldn't have. But, you know, it's better than just blinking at it or not doing anything at all.
How about you, Margaret? You good on that?
Well, if you look at it, there's always recalled products that tend to get sold, isn't there? Right. If you think about cars, you know, we've sold this many cars, but they need to be recalled back in. And if you want, you go back to the dealer and you can trade it in for another, or you could get a different product, or you can get the whatever it is fixed on it. I don't know if you can do that in this case, but yeah, like, and I'm with Mark too. It's not something you would see very often either. Right.
I don't know about that. You know, I would be quite worried because, you know, the baby can't say to you, "Hey, mom, I heard that this chair that you've bought for me has actually been recalled because children have suffocated." You think, that's not going to happen. So yeah, maybe there should be even greater penalties for doing that. I don't know whether any child actually lost his or her life, but even the potential is terrifying. 13 million.
I think they should at least make sure that they realize that, okay, you know what, there is something wrong with this particular product. Like they used to do years ago with the Fisher-Price strollers. I can remember there was one, a couple of lines that came out, right? And they said, well, if you have such and such a stroller, this model number, you can either take it to get it repaired or turn it in for new product or whatever the case is. So I think that might be the best way to go with it.
If those stores said, "Oh, we're recalling everything that we shouldn't have sold to you," that might just sort of be done quietly. Whereas getting a huge fine like this might be enough for them to say, "I guess we better not be selling recalled products any longer."
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, is the lesson learned? We'll have to stay tuned to find out. Well, this has been lovely. It's so nice talking to both of you, Margaret and Mark. Thank you so much for giving us your opinions. I can't imagine anything more fun than hearing what other people think about important topics. Thanks so much.
Thank you very
coming
much.
Coming up next, we wrap up the show, plus find out what's coming up on the next edition of Now with Dave Brown.
I'm Margaret Shepherd of the AMI podcast, Tripping On Air. Every month, my co-host Alex Hajar and I spill the tea on what it's really like to live with MS. Watch Tripping On Air on YouTube or download wherever you get your pods.